Pacific.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today it's going to be really fun because both of my guests, I'm going to have two guests on, and I'm going to be able to talk to them both for half of the show. So that's really fun for me and for them and for you because we get to go a little deeper into what they do and learn their techniques. And a lot of today is about inspiration. I have two very different quilt makers and artists that are going to talk about their creativity, inspiring creativity, what goes on in their life that way. And I know as quilters, this is really something we get very excited about. So first up, I have artist Carrie Bloomston. And Carrie's work I first saw and got introduced to by her fabric lines, which are with Wyndham. But as I started looking at her work and looking at what she does, she is much, much more than just a piece of fabric. Her creativity is just, it's oozing everywhere. So Carrie, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You know, I'm just very excited. When we chatted for a few minutes there at the trade show, it was like so exciting to listen to you talk about creativity. You never tire of that, do you?
No, I'm very passionate about it. So it's sort of always a good topic of conversation for me.
That is so great. First, tell me a little bit about your backstory, because you are an artist and were you like, you know, an artist from birth, you know, and, you know, coloring on your diapers and all that?
I kind of think I was. I mean, my mom tells a story about how she found me all tangled up. And she and my dad in the 70s had a needlepoint business and they would paint needlepoint canvases. Mm-hmm. And this is very short-lived part of our history. But she found me all tangled up in the needlepoint basket, like at age two. And she just had this total feeling that I would be an artist. And she is an artist, and my dad designs and manufactures clothing. So they're both incredibly creative people, and so I definitely got this gift from them. But, yeah, I've been an artist my whole life. I mean, in sixth grade, I got the Best Artist Award.
Oh, wow. Did you frame that?
Other people could see that in me even yes. when I was really young.
You know, that's I love hearing that about people. And I also love hearing people who have come from creative families. You know, my family are like, you know, engineers and people who read and you know, they don't paint or do any of those kind of things. So, you know, when you were little, did they do projects with you, your parents? Did they kind of encourage that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think not so much my dad, but my mom. I mean, he always encouraged it, but he wasn't necessarily like, sitting on the floor painting with me like my mom was. She was always doing something creative, whether it was painting or learning to paint something or crafting or making something and, you know, like making our headboards or making, and she's an interior designer now. So she definitely, we had a really creative family. We had our own studio in the house when I was like early high school. So she had a studio that we converted our garage. We turned it into a room. And so I got to grow up. I basically took that over. Oh. And I had this 500 square foot studio in high school that was basically just mine. And whether I was making collages or, you know, wanting to dance or paint, which I painted as a kid, I started making large abstract paintings when I was 13.
Wow.
And roughly thereabout. Yeah. And I'm like 10 feet by 3 feet, for example. And really, really large, working on the floor with acrylic paint, working with my hands, totally abstract, and studying art with my mentors in Alabama at the time where I grew up. And so I was just immersed in being a painter. So by the time, and I sold my work all throughout high school. I had my first one-woman show when I was 17. And, you know, I lived in this incredibly supportive community, so everyone bought my work. And I mean, it was a really good It was really good training wheels for life, you know, like I felt really blessed by that. And so by the time I got to Rhode Island School of Design, where I went to study, it was, there was no confusion about, well, what do you want to major in? You know, like, right. I was already a painter. I'd already been a painter. So, of course, I was going to study painting, even though I studied a lot of other things while I was there, like glass blowing. And I pretty much played in every building at school. But, yeah, so it was always very much supported and encouraged in me. And so that was super lucky.
So when you approach your painting, just sort of talking to, because I know you're very, we're going to talk a little bit later about how you feel like everybody can be creative, because we're not all, you know, come from such a nurturing environment,
right.
and get the training and have the natural part. But you, you've taken your designs, and how did you sort of develop, like, what did you have a plan when you started painting? Just think back, you know, when you were doing it as a younger person.
So when I was a child, what was inspiring me? Is that what you're asking?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I was, I honestly, I don't know how I knew what I was doing, because I was making super abstract work in a very untrained way. I mean, okay. I didn't really exactly know what I was doing. I just sort of knew the feeling I was after. Mm-hmm. And so for me, art gives voice to all the feelings and emotions of human existence. And so I used it that way. I used it to sort of express myself in a way that words couldn't do. And, you know, where words leave off, that's where creativity and art making kind of begins, even if you're a writer. So like words get us so far, and then we use this paint stuff to kind of continue expressing the, I was really temporality and the sort of fleeting existence of nature. So at 13, believe it or not, that was the sort of stuff I was thinking about and filling
That's
my work
very
with.
Deep, Carrie.
I know.
Very deep for That's a 13-year-old.
Yeah, so I was a kid too, but I was also grappling with that stuff. And art is an incredible place to put all of the thoughts and feelings that we have and in a kind of safe way to explore. And so I was working with my hands and mushing color all around and making very atmospheric work. And still, and even as an adult, my work is very much rooted in landscape painting, except it's completely abstract. So I'm not looking at an outside landscape. It's just sort of an interior landscape.
So how did you end up transitioning over into fiber? Did you sew also when you were younger?
No, you know, my mom had a sewing machine. We always had this. I still have the 30-year-old Singer sewing machine that she taught me with. And she would sew very simple things like curtain panels and, you know, very, very simple straight line kind of sewing. Mm-hmm. She definitely was not the mom who sewed my clothes for sure. But so we would sew really simple stuff, and I did take it in home ec, but that was about it. And then when I was pregnant with my daughter 5 years ago, I had this total urge, this huge urge to start sewing. And all I knew was that I had to make my son these instead of using plastic Ziploc baggies, I wanted to make handmade, you know, little pouches to put his sandwich in.
Oh,
and
my.
I knew that I could do that. I just didn't know how. And so I tried it. And I bought this, like, super slippery nylon and this cotton, and I was trying to make these snack bags, and it was a disaster. Like, I couldn't make it work. And so I went to my local quilt shop, and the women were so lovely and kind. And they said, okay, well, you can come in, and we have a sewing group. And so the ladies just in the sewing group basically taught me how to sew. And then I signed up for their beginning classes and pretty much learned there all the basics. And then really soon they kept asking me to show them how to do the stuff I was doing. So my art background definitely served me.
So you kind of took it out of the sort of the basics, because that's your personality. You're going to always put your stamp on it, just like we all do. But your stamp is, you know, your mind is probably always got a ton of projects going on.
Yeah, it's like I've never met a rule I can fully follow. It's so much easier for me to write it down and do it my way than to try. When I'm following instructions, it's super hard for me because I'm like, what? I get really confused. And so it's easier for me to break the rules than to follow them, and I mean break them respectfully, of course. But yeah, so I tend to kind of, once I know the basic, I mean, I can craft in any, whatever form of craft we're doing, whether sewing or, you know, weaving or pottery, you really want to respect the tradition of the craft itself and know how to actually do the techniques. At the same time, it's so good to liberate yourself once you know them, then you can abstract them, which is what I learned in art school. You can't paint an apple until you can see the apple, and you can't paint it abstractly until you can see it and draw it realistically. So that you kind of need to know the structure before you break it apart. And so, yeah, I always, I'm always kind of playing with the rules in that way and, expressing, because I want to express myself. And mainly for me, since I am a lifelong artist who has just learned to sew 5 years ago, I want to get from A to B in the quickest way possible. So I, when I see sewing, I'm pretty much just looking as the sewing machine as like a gigantic pencil.
Right.
And my, you know, or like my stash of fabric is sort of like my palette of paint. And I use those tools like much more like an artist. It's because I'm trying to use them really fast and directly to communicate what I'm trying to say. So I want craft, but I don't want it to like hang me up and make it take a lot longer.
Right.
So yeah, I'm trying to be really direct in my expression.
And your work is, when people go out to your site, they can see that you do things that are more applique because they're drawn shapes. You don't have a lot of traditional patchwork because that's a little too structured, I would assume.
Yeah, you know, I love the look of patchwork. And I have made a few things that are kind of patchwork, I guess you would say inspired. But what resonates for me and what I'm trying to communicate usually in my work is much more sort of painterly. So there's a lot of negative space, and I'm using applique and very much a fan of raw edges. And I used to be sort of in love with fusible web, but now I'm kind of in love with my glue stick, my washable school glue stick. So I'm working super directly and like letting this washable school glue, which of course, you know, you wash out and it doesn't have any stiffness or anything. Letting it sort of tack my fabric down until I get to the sewing machine, because you only need it to stay down for, you know, the hour it takes you to construct your image or days. And then you can use the thread to hold it in place. So so fusible kind of creates the stiffness that's, you know.
That's
different.
Pretty interesting. You know, we're going to have to take a break here in a second, Carrie. When you stitch, just tell me, you know, like in 3 seconds, do you use a blanket stitch, a straight stitch, or are you putting all the layers together with just the quilting?
I am a huge fan of straight stitch. Nothing fancy.
Well, we're going to be right back after the break, okay?
Okay.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am talking to artist Carrie Bloomston of such-designs.com. And Carrie, you know, I think this is the time to let's talk some detail of technique, because I think what you do is something that a lot of people can do to loosen up, because quilters, if particularly if they're doing a lot of traditional patchwork, they're not sort of like letting loose and playing a little bit. And I want to go back to what we were talking about before the break when you're using the glue stick. Tell me a little bit more about that, how you do it, and then what your stitches that you use.
Okay, so I totally agree with you that loosening up is awesome, and
yeah.
And I definitely like to warm up no matter what I'm doing, if I'm painting or sewing. I kind of think you have to align yourself with the language of your material. So that means you just sort of, you need to get in and make a mess before you start trying to make something look good, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah. So you just, it's kind of like, you know, the artist with the blank piece of paper. It's very intimidating. So the first thing I'll do when I sit down is I'll pour paint on it, or I'll drip paint on it, or I'll somehow ruin the whiteness. And then I can have a conversation with that, what I've just done. I can make a mess and then I can deal with the mess. And so sewing, it's the same thing. Like before I start, I'll get out a piece of fabric and just sit down at my sewing machine and just do loopy, you know, kind of free motion stitching just to get in the zone. It's sort of like a sewing meditation, just to get in the zone of sewing. It kind of loosens up your creativity and it gets you ready to start working on your real project without all the pressure of it being perfect, which is mainly something that we all struggle with. Like, oh, it's supposed to look good. But if you give yourself permission for it to not look good, then it's much easier to, you know, get into the language. So yeah, I use glue sticks in such a direct, it's such a direct way. I mean, I love to rip fabric. And so, for example, I have a quilt that's a bird's nest, and I decided that when I was constructing that bird's nest that I had to be like a bird and actually, you know, rip the fabric into shreds, like one-inch strips or half-inch strips, and then glue them down with a glue stick really fast. Not, you know, thinking can be your enemy. If you're thinking too much, then you're not, like, feeling, and you're not in your body. So you kind of got to, like, plug in that case, I'm trying to be a bird, and kind of get connected to yourself, and then just work really organically and intuitively and kind of placing stuff as you go, and then using the glue stick to sort of just tack stuff down. It doesn't even have to be fully glued. And that kind of loose collage style, I like to flip my fabric, you know, so that a little bit of the backside shows and it rolls on itself. It's not just, you know, straight, smooth, perfect. And then I'll go to the sewing machine and use a straight stitch. I also like zigzag, but nothing fussy, you know, and then I'll kind of go up and down the edge of every piece of applique, no matter what size or shape, so that I'm sealing it in. Because if it's, for example, if it's a quilt, later it's going to be quilted anyway. Right. So I'm just trying to get it to the quilter, and I am not a quilter. So I'm kind of just getting it down so that it's functional, and knowing that all my edges will fray in the wash and all that stuff, and I like that. So it's a really super direct way of making your fabric into an art form without really worrying about you know, all the precision and perfection, which can kind of hang us up.
And I think your bird's nest one is really something people could have some fun with, because it is something recognizable. It's a gorgeous pattern. It's called the nest.
Thank you.
Yeah, just something really, that would be a really fun one to cut the string. I don't do a lot of ripped fabric myself, but I can see how that would be very freeing to just do the strips and get going with it.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I even mixed some, my favorite product is this Leilani Arts recycled sari ribbon. Do you know that stuff? Yeah,
right.
It's incredible. And it's basically they're scooping up scraps from the factory floor in India in the sari production industry. And then a women's collective is sewing that into this ribbon, which I use for so many projects. I use it in my work all the time. And so in my bird's nest, I would grab some of that silk to mix in with my, you know, ripped cotton just to create a different palette, a different texture. It kind of gives it more depth. I use that product, Leilani Art Silk, and ripped fabric kind of hand in hand. Like if I'm making something that needs to like hang down and sort of flop off of something, I'll use those together. Or if I'm tracing letters, like big, I like to write in cursive on projects like I might write the word love. And so I'll write that by hand, and then I'll just use the glue stick to glue down the silk sari ribbon or my torn fabric and then tack the word love down and then sew over it. And you have this like beautiful, beautiful object.
Now, tell me a little bit about your fabric and what it looks like, because what you're all describing, to me, that's now your fabric lines, too, that you have that sort of collage-y, very flowing work. Do you do you paint it like that, or do you actually make something and then draw from it? How does that work for you?
It's interesting because when I was asked by Wyndham to design fabric for them, which was such an honor, and I was really excited, the thing is, I have no idea how to design fabric, and they knew that. But I, of course, am an artist, so I can't design fabric on a computer, and my computer skills are so limited. And I've taken Adobe Illustrator classes, so now I don't cry every time I touch my computer. But I can't design that way because that's not my language. So I sat down. I'm like, well, how do I want to design this fabric? What do I like to sew with? Was my question. My answer is, I like to sew with textures, very almost traditional dots, stripes, you know, really simple textures. But I wanted to kind of reinvent them in a way, and so I cut them out of paper. I cut that. So my first line for Wyndham was called Collage, and my second line is Paint, which is releasing and coming out to stores in August. Mm-hmm. And both of them are made the same way, which is I used painted paper and found newspaper and magazine words, and I cut it all apart, and I glue it down with a glue stick. See, I'm in love with the glue stick. And I'm making original art that I'm sending to Wyndham, and they're putting it into Repeat, which is then translated into fabric. So the images are all mine, but they have to get them to sort of, you know, lay out on the big goods. So it's a really direct way for me to communicate. And I wanted to empower people to sew, like to cut them up and use them exactly like I just said. So so I have a print called Newsprint, and I made my own. This is the only one I probably did on the computer because I basically laid up a mock newspaper, but I used the content was from my blog and from, you know, my favorite writers. And there's quotes from, you know, amazing people, really inspiring quotes. And it's all just collaged and cut up and put into a format, which is then turned into the fabric. So when people are sewing, they're cutting out all these, you know, the word blessings or a Matisse quote or whatever. So it's all kind of hidden in my fabric. And then people are finding it and then making incredible, inspiring stuff with it, which is exactly what I wanted. And I kind of took that further in my second collection, which is more about kind of like it has paintbrushes and color wheels and paint swatches. So it's more about a painter's tools, but they're still filled with words. So there's three more colors of newsprint. And it's just super fun to kind of find, as I'm working, I'm just standing in my studio with scissors and a glue stick and looking through the newspaper.
I love that. Yeah, I just love that because that's what it looks like. Now, I want to get one more thing in, Carrie, before we're done, before we have another break. We're talking about your prayer flag project. Tell me, we have about 2 minutes. Tell me about that.
Okay, so people want to send in prayer flags for this project in honor of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who is visiting Alabama in October. They can go to www.happyflagproject.com, and we intend to drape Birmingham, Alabama, in prayer flags, which are collected from all over the world, to sort of honor this incredible event and the incredible civil rights progress that's been made in Alabama, and just to honor this visit by the Dalai Lama. So people, we already have like 500 flags that are coming in from everywhere.
My.
Yeah.
Are you doing this yourself, Carrie, or do you have a group that are
My mom and I, I grew up in Alabama, and so this just sort of fell in our lap, and my mom and I are doing it together, and we're now, you know, leading workshops and groups, and the website kind of gives sizes and dimensions if people want to sew their own flags, and they can be a prayer for anything, a wish for your family, for yourself, for the world. It's just a really nice way to create meaningful creativity and connect. So,
and you have examples and all the information at your site called happyflagproject.com.
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, you've got one more thing I know that I want you to tell us about. In a little later this year, you have a book coming out.
Oh, I do. It's called The Little Spark, 30 Ways to Ignite Your Creativity. And it really is a culmination of everything I've learned in my life and how to help people tap into their own innate creativity. So it's like it's a roadmap, but it's interactive. So each chapter, you can read it cover to cover, you can read it each chapter one at a time. And as people read it, they're kind of exploring their own process. So what is your creative time of day? what kind of space requirements do you have? And the book is written for everybody, whether you want to be a belly dancer or bake cakes or, you know, be a painter or even learn how to design on the computer. Whatever your creative passion looks like, this is sort of a roadmap to help you get into that process in a really nice way. And also to trust yourself, you know, as you go. So that's pretty much the whole book kind of takes you on this journey. And it's really super exciting. It's coming out in November with Stash Books. I'm just so, so happy about it. So
I think it's going to, I think that it's going to be really good. Be able to sort of get that inspiration from you right in our lap. And the little prompts are always a wonderful way for people to work.
Yeah. It's nice to be inspired in a really quick, simple, fun way on a daily basis, you know?
Mm-hmm. Carrie, this has been so much fun. I am so glad that you were here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was super fun and a total honor. So thank you for asking me.
Well, I want everybody to visit you at such-designs.com. Visit Carrie Bloomston and look for her fabric at Wyndham. And her upcoming book will be something I think everybody wants to check out. So thanks so much, Carrie.
Thank you so much, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast, and we're going to be taking a little break, and when we come back, I have another guest that's going to join me for the second half of the show, and we're going to go a little bit like this one with some background and then some tips, because we have a whole different kind of inspiration.
Boost your sewing skills for daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's radio show, which is all podcasted. We have a new show nearly every week, every Monday. And I am really, really excited now to have Krista Watson here. I have been following Krista's blog for quite a while. We sort of, you know, comment on each other's and follow back and forth. And what I found really interesting is Krista's been a quilt maker for quite a long time. And she's done sort of a change with the type of quilt making she's doing. And I thought that her whole journey was really interesting because I think many of us do this exact same journey. And I really am excited to have her share and talk to us about it. So hi, Krista. Thank you for being here.
Oh, hi, Pat. It's nice to talk to you. I'm so excited.
Yes, 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 yes. You know, I just think that you have some incredible work going on, and you have been for a long time, but I really want to sort of share the story. We'll talk first a little bit about your backstory and then kind of what you're doing now. So how long have you been making quilts?
Well, I've been doing it for just about 20 years. This Thanksgiving will be about 20 years of quilting, and I tell you, I feel like I'm just getting started.
I know. It's like I wrote recently is like I've made a lot of quilts. I have no intention of stopping. It's like there's always something new. Now, 20 years, you look like you're 20. So, you know.
Well, thank you.
I know you're not
well.
20. Yes. So were you a very, very young quilter when you were learning?
I was. I started just about a year after I got married, and I'd never grown up with quilting. I don't think I'd ever seen quilting before. I was always interested in the arts and being creative and kind of dabbled in different things. But, yeah, just about a year after I got married, some ladies at church were making some charity quilts, and they were putting them on the frame and just hand-tying them with the yarn. And I sat down and kind of joined them and took a few stitches, and I just thought that was the coolest thing I had ever done in my life. I don't know how I had missed it, but I thought it was so fun. And one of the ladies took notice. She was kind of the lady in charge, and she invited me over a couple weeks later, which happened to be a Thanksgiving weekend. That's how come I remember it. And she just said, I'm going to teach you a couple of things if you're interested. So we sat down, and she taught me important things like what a stash was and, you know, a sewing machine and quilting. And in about an afternoon, we made a pillow, and it was love at first stitch.
So you actually had not even sewn before you did this.
I had done a little bit. My mom was a sewer, and she was really good, and she tried to get me involved in sewing when I was younger, and I think I made a skirt, but it just didn't interest me. Garment sewing, apparel, cute doodads, I love them, but that just wasn't my interest, and back then, I didn't even know about quilts. So she tried to get me involved, and I thank her now because I knew what a sewing machine was, but that was pretty much it.
I know, I'm always interested to learn, and I'm sure you hear this too, that people, you know, they didn't have sewing in school, they didn't have parents who sewed, so all of a sudden, later in life, they're like, well, I need to learn what a sewing machine is, you know, I don't even know anything about the thing, but I need to quilt.
Exactly, that's how I felt.
So, when you were just a baby quilter, do you remember what that was like? I mean, you were excited about it, but do you kind of remember trying to figure out what you like to make?
I did. I just had this in me. Like I said, I tried this new craft. I thought it was so much fun. I remember going to my husband and saying, oh my goodness, look what I'm doing. I have to do this. And so I didn't really know anything. I just went to the fabric store and I bought a bunch of squares of fabric and I put them together just like the ladies at church had done. And I bought some ribbon and, you know, tied it all together. And I didn't even know about seam allowances, Pat. I knew I wanted to cut out 4-inch squares and make this 4-inch patchwork quilt. So I cut them out 4 inches. I didn't know they would shrink down to 3.5. You know, I just kind of figured it out as I went along and just had a great time doing it. And then a little bit later, you know, after I kind of bumbled around a little bit on my own, you know, I took some, got some books and started reading magazines and things like that. And I just dove in, you know, feet first, because I just thought it was so exciting and fun to try.
Now, did you have a quilt store near you? Or were you sort of buying fabric just anywhere?
Well, I didn't know about the different qualities of fabric, so we had like some of those discount stores, so I'd go there and I'd buy things that I didn't know about cotton, but I bought things that would kind of work, and so some of them were home decky, and some of them were stretchy, and some were flannel, but I didn't care. I was drawn to the colors and the patterns, and my mom had seen that I was starting to have an interest, so she kind of let me borrow her little sewing machine and try it out and see if I'd like it, you know, and things like that, but it wasn't until I think I started reading magazines and things like that, that I started, you know, finding out, oh, you use 100% cotton fabric. Oh, you use, you know, needles and all the kind of tools. And so I remember buying a book and just going through it and just reading what it said to do, you know, because back then we didn't have the internet as a resource. We didn't have online tutorials and blogs where we could just Google something. You know, we had books and we had libraries and we had magazines and there were a few quilt stores, which I finally figured out where they were. And, you know, so it took a little while. It was a little bit of a learning curve.
I learned to actually quilt in a quilt store because, yeah, my friend told me I had to learn to quilt. So she signed me up to learn in the store. And so I was lucky enough that my area had a very large guild, and my beginning instructor told me that, you know, I needed, here, for my friend tells me I need to quilt, my instructor says you need to join the guild. So I did, because I had no idea what that even meant. I had no idea what a quilt guild was. Did you find a quilt guild eventually that you joined?
I did, and I tell you, it was probably one of the first turning points in my life. It was a couple years, maybe about 2 years after I'd been bumbling around on my own. And I was in a local quilt shop, and there were little brochures to join a quilting guild. And I thought, oh, that sounds perfect. So I kind of read it, and I called up the gal who was the president at the time, who, by the way, is still actively involved. We're still really good friends 18 years later. But I called her up, and I was like, tell me about this. What's the deal with all this quilting and people getting together? And she was so wonderful. She kind of took me in under her wing, and I just hung out with all these wonderful ladies and started taking classes in the guild and getting to know people. And it's a pretty large group. Over the years, you know, they have a constant membership of about 400 to 500 ladies, and they've been going strong now for 25 years. I've been a member for 18, and I've kind of grown up in that guild. And so, yeah, I really credit them for a lot of my growth and my learning and encouragement. They were super encouraging all the time.
Yeah, I think that is what people who've never experienced it or maybe tried it, but it didn't click with them the first time. It's like, well, try again, because the environment is there. And in the beginning, like you said, that's all we had. I mean, you didn't have a way to meet quilters online because it didn't exist yet.
Exactly.
Now, you went into business at some point. How did you decide to do that? And tell me a little bit about what you did.
Oh, sure. Well, a couple years into it, you know, I was kind of a poor college student with my husband, and I started getting into it and realizing that it could be kind of an expensive hobby. Well, it kind of dawned on me, because I was actually in college for business. I have a degree in business, and I knew at one point I wanted to own my own business. I just didn't know what. So at the time, it kind of dawned on me, well, maybe if I did something with my quilting, maybe I could support the habit. So I just started off, you know, making things for friends and, you know, going to craft fairs and co-ops and kind of selling my work. That led me to, you know, purchasing my supplies wholesale. Then I got into a little bit of teaching, which was super fun. And then one of my students actually suggested that I sell my leftover fabrics, no, my leftovers, online. And this was, you know, this was at the time things were just starting to get going, maybe about 11 or 12 years ago. You know, the online thing was kind of starting to pick up a little bit. And I thought, what is she talking about? Like, who is going to buy fabric online? You know? And so I kind of hemmed and hawed around a little bit, and I was like, no, I'll just stick to my teaching, and I'll just, you know, sell things on the side, and I'm happy with that. But she kept saying, no, you need to do this. You need to get online. This is the way to go. You need to try it out. And so I said, okay, I'll give it a shot, you know, and I tried it out and I liked it. So it worked for me.
I think that's so funny. No, you need to try this. Who's going to buy fabric online? It's like, hello.
I know, it's a huge thing.
Everybody
so
raised
but
their
at the time,
hand.
It was like, what? I mean, I think I had been on eBay once and, like, you know, had bought, like, a used sewing machine on there. Yeah. And I was just, you know, what is this online thing? What's this all about? And now, you know, 10, 12 years later, it's huge. So I just laugh at it now.
You know, I love that you've been recently talking about, and you and I have talked about this, and you've talked about it on your website, how you've made some changes in the type of quilt making that you like to do. Tell me what you were doing when you first started out. What type of quilts did you like to make?
I started out, I think, as a lot of people do. I was just making traditional quilts. I was following a few patterns. I would try to go to local quilt shows, and I always enjoyed the making. I loved the tactile, touching the fabric and, you know, putting it under the sewing machine and making the whole quilt and even doing the machine quilting. And I loved it, but I didn't feel like I had my own style. So I just made a bunch of traditional quilts. And, you know, then I knew some friends that were getting to art quilts. And so, okay, well, let's try some art quilts. And, okay, let's try some contemporary quilts. And I feel like I kind of dabbled around for maybe, I don't know, 16, 17 years, just making, you know, normal quilts that were kind of fun. And I remember I would go to a few classes and I would hear people come in, like our guild would bring in, you know, big name speakers, and they would always talk about, you know, discover your style, discover your voice, you know, that kind of thing. And I kind of put that aside because I thought, well, I don't have a style. I don't have a voice. I just like to make it. I don't care what it looks like. I just want to make it. And so I always had that in me. But it really wasn't until about 2 years ago when I discovered modern quilting that I thought, that's what they're talking about. That's my style. That's my voice. That is it. And I kicked myself because, you know, modern quilting has been around for a few years, and I just discovered it, and I feel like I'm making up for lost time. I'm like, where was I when it was starting? You know, how did I not know about this? And literally it was that moment, that light bulb moment of, like, that's what I like.
You know, I did the very similar thing. And when I do my presentations, I sort of talk about it because I had what I called, like, a life-changing experience by going to a particular workshop. I took a workshop with Nancy Crow, who is a contemporary quilter, works improvisational, which, of course, back then we did not call improvisational, but that's really what she does. And when I took that, it changed my whole way of thinking about quilting. And I had needed that. And you did a very similar thing by finding the modern quilting. But go ahead and share with me and with us how that happened, because you went to QuiltCon and sort of had an aha moment.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it was, I remember it. It's so funny. The big moments I remember, the little ones in between, not so much. But I remember it was about the summer of 2012. And because I was an avid fan of, you know, buying books and reading magazines and subscribing and finding out, of course, I had a subscription to American Patchwork and Quilting. And I remember getting an issue and flipping through the June issue 2012. And lo and behold, my heart skipped a beat when I saw this gorgeous quilt by Jackie Gearing and Katie Peterson in that issue, and it was one of their modern quilts. And I just literally was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So, of course, I had to read all about it. I had to research. I had to get online, and I had to find out, you know, what's the deal with modern quilting and the modern quilt guild, you know, and it was such good timing because that was the summer of 2012, and they were just starting to put out information about QuiltCon, and I just knew I had to go. I mean, this was like, you know, a couple months into it, checking it out, and I remember going to my husband and said, guess what? I'm going to Texas. I'm going to QuiltCon. I don't know a soul. I don't know why I'm going. I don't know who I'm going to meet. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I said, but I'm going. And he was like, go for it. And so I did, and in the intervening time, I just continued to devour everything I could, learning and reading. I made my first modern quilt. I started joining, you know, online groups, and I started following blogs, and I literally immersed myself into it so that by the time February arrived, you know, months later, February 2013, I literally was just blown away with the sheer volume of awesomeness that was QuiltCon. And not only was I excited to see all these quilts that I had been waiting my whole life to learn about, the interactions with everybody there and the fact that here were these people not only exhibiting their work, they were offering lectures and workshops and things that I was very comfortable with from my years as a traditional quilt maker. I knew about them, but now they were doing what I liked, and they were doing it in a style that I liked. So it just all came together, and it was like this huge light bulb moment, like you said. So I came back from QuiltCon ready to take on the modern world and saying, okay, how can I do this? What can I do? How can I become more involved? And it really has been exciting and a nonstop whirlwind since then.
Yeah, I think that that's really such a hugely fascinating thing for quilters to know that if things aren't really clicking, there is something out there that's going to make that happen for you. And you have to keep looking and exploring, because you never know when it's just going to hit you. It's like going to hit you on the top of the head all of a sudden. It's like, okay, that's it. I just love that you opened the magazine and saw the quilts and went like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was like, oh, that's what I want to do. That's what I've been waiting for. Hopefully for everybody else, it won't take them so long to learn.
Right. Well, we're going to take a little break, Krista.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about entering quilts and shows.
Okay, sounds great.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latents. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
What other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Krista Watson from KristaQuilts.com. So when you, Krista, when you started like just going total immersion, I mean, really, you've been like a crazy woman because I've sort of, watched you do this. Maybe, you know, not, you know, step by step, but it's sort of like boom, boom, boom. All of a sudden, it's like, whoa, there she goes. You decided also to enter quilts and shows. And I thought it would be fun to talk about that a little bit because I know that a lot of people say to me, they'll go, oh, I didn't see any of X, Y, and Z type of quilt in that show. I was so disappointed. It's like, well, if people don't enter their quilts, then you're not going to see them. You know, you can't see XYZ if nobody enters XYZ. And so you've started entering your quilts in all kinds of shows. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, this kind of goes back to, again, when I was, you know, the baby quilter and still learning and, you know, being really involved. I kind of feel like I kind of hit out in my local traditional guild, you know, for about 18 years or so and being very happy with, you know, what I was doing, you know, not knowing there were, you know, bigger things really beyond my borders. And so I got very comfortable entering shows in our local show, entering my quilt, getting really good feedback from it, having a very positive experience because we were all friends and we were all encouraging each other. And I knew that there were these big, amazing quilting shows out there, but I never was able to go to them because my kids were younger and they were little or, you know, I couldn't travel and things like that. And so I knew they were out there, but I never thought that someone like me could, number one, get in, you know, let alone win any kind of recognition. And I had this kind of stumbling block, which was called perfectionism, which I think people have. And I just thought, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I could never do that. I can never do that. So I never pursued it. But then again, once I went to QuiltCon, I actually, that was the first time I ever entered a large show. You know, the fact that I got a quilt into the show, it didn't win an award, but just the fact that someone thought it was good enough to get in was such a huge, like, you know, such a huge burst of energy for me and such a big pat on the back of like, okay, well, maybe I am good enough. Maybe I will try. And so from there, I went on and I just have started entering in some of the shows. And, you know, I don't get recognition for every quilt I enter. You know, most of them I don't receive any recognition. But it just really gave me something to go for. It gave me, you know, a deadline to shoot for. It gave me something to try. And it's, like I said, it's just been a really positive experience overall, and I just encourage other people to do it because I want them to have the positive experiences that I've had. You know, I don't want to keep all the fun to myself. I want other people to get to experience it too.
And you have a few reasons why it's important to you to do this.
Yes, absolutely. Well, like you said, if we weren't entering our quilts, there'd be nothing to see. One of the things that really, really hit home to me or that I really resonated with when I was learning about the Modern Quilt Guild is one of the founders, I remember them saying that at the time they had gone to all these big quilt shows that I had never been to before, and they were disappointed that they weren't seeing modern quilts and shows, and so that's one of the whole reasons that they wanted to found the Modern Quilt Guild. One of the reasons they wanted to put on QuiltCon is to give an opportunity for all these people to get this modern, you know, quilting idea out there. And I thought, all right, well, let's see, what can I do? You know, what can I do to further the cause? How can I be a little drop in the bucket to help them get their goal accomplished? And so, yeah, I've tried, and it's just been a lot of fun. And another reason, of course, is I want to learn how to be a better quilter. You know, I always feel like no matter where I am in my quilting, I can always improve. So by putting my quilts out there in public, it gives me a chance to get feedback from judges and experienced professionals. You know, how can I make my quilts better? What can I do to become better as a quilter?
And you're also now working with the organization, the Modern Quilt Guild, to draft some judging guidelines.
I am. It's been really fun. Jackie Gehring, she's just one of my idols. She is the chairperson of the Modern Quilt Guild this year, and she had the idea that she wanted to form a committee to try to help educate people about modern quilting and develop some guidelines. And so I, you know, raised my hand. I said, oh, I'd love to help you with that, just with my experience that I had before. And it's been wonderful because we actually have a couple of nationally certified judges that are on the committee, as well as a few members like myself, just basically kind of getting together and try to hash out, you know, what is modern quilting all about and what do we want to project to the world and how can we, you know, encourage other people to enter modern quilts. And of course, one of the big reasons, one of the big ways we can encourage other people to do modern quilting is to get them into big shows so that people that may, like myself, that may have not heard of modern quilting, you know, yet, can get out there and actually see them at a show and hopefully be drawn to it just like I am.
Now, what is one of the favorite pieces that you've exhibited so far of your own work?
I'd have to say probably my chevrons quilt. I got a ribbon at Paducah for my chevron quilt, and I was so excited about it because it was actually a remake of the quilt I had entered into QuiltCon. You know, the one at QuiltCon I had done and got some good feedback, and, you know, one of the feedbacks was, you know, well, let's try this out with, you know, maybe a different color scheme or maybe a little different quilting. And so in my quest to become a better quilter, I said, okay, let's do this. Let's remake this quilt. Let's try it. Let's make it bigger. Let's try a few different things. You know, let's put it in the show and let's see what kind of feedback I could get from it. And so, yeah, it's just been really a positive experience, and it just makes me want to do more.
Now, you have a section for people who are interested in sort of how you're progressing with your exhibiting, because I think it's fascinating, is that you have called Krista's Quilts, and you list the quilts that you've exhibited and where and what happened, whether you got a ribbon or what was going on, so people can see that.
Exactly, exactly. It's, you know, blogging has been so great because it's kind of like my little journal and my little, kind of like my virtual scrapbook of my quilts. It gives me a chance to, you know, keep track of what I'm doing and where they're going. And then occasionally I'll either highlight one of my quilts, or I might do a quilt along on one of my quilts, and I'll just try to talk about them and kind of show them, just to get other people out there saying, you know, this is what I'm doing, this is what I've chosen to do, you know, why don't you do it too? It's really not that hard. In fact, I've got a friend of mine who's a fellow blogger friend, and we talk all the time about, like, okay, where are you entering your quilt? And I'm entering my quilt in that show, and you know, let's cheer each other on, and let's do it. And it's been wonderful, because instead of seeing it as like competition or this thing to be feared, it's a very encouraging, nurturing environment. And I'm one of the biggest cheerleaders for quilting, you know, modern, traditional, any kind of quilting. And I just want to say, you know, get out there, share your quilts with other people. You never know when someone is going to come along and be inspired by that quilt and, you know, change their life.
And you also are sharing, like, what you, the products that you put in, type of fabric, type of thread, and how long you took to do it.
I am. I remember, again, back going to my beginning days, I remember all these articles about, oh, you want to document your quilts, and you want to make your quilt labels, and you want to take little swatches, and you want to create kind of like a little diary of your quilt. Well, that was too hard for me to deal with back then, you know, keeping track of all these different papers, and, you know, and this was before we had digital cameras and stuff. But now with all this wonderful technology, I can basically create this scrapbook online. And so on the one hand, I have it out there to share with other people that are interested, but honestly, it's mostly for me, because I want to get an idea, okay, what kind of batting did I put in that quilt? And, oh, I really liked it. It was so soft, and it really quilted well. And how long did it take me to do the machine quilting? And, you know, what fabrics did I use? And so it's kind of a resource for me to go back and look upon and say, okay, I want to use this batting, and I want to use this thread, and I want to use these fabrics on my next quilt. And so it, that way I don't have to reinvent the wheel every time, basically.
And anybody could do this. I've seen this done, people who've used their blog solely as what your section of your quilts is. There's a lady that I found her because she actually made one of my patterns. And so, you know, that's how I found out what she was doing. But I was fascinated because she basically, that's what her blog is. It's just her journal of all the quilts she makes and the information about them, just like you've done for that one section. It's a great tool. I think that that's just really, really wonderful. You are also a great teacher, Krista, because you are constantly not only teaching when you go out now on the road to teach, but you teach on your website. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Oh, sure. I love teaching. I got into teaching just a couple of years after I was quilting because I wanted to share. You know, I just think this quilting is the most fun thing in the world, and I just want to share it with as many people as possible. And so what I did is when I first started teaching, I kind of developed a beginner series where it's a start-to-finish class where, you know, we start at the very beginning with the rotary cutting, we do the piecing, we do the machine quilting, we do the binding, we do the whole thing, so that by the end of class time, students actually have a finished product that they can be proud of. And so what I've been able to do online is I've been able to develop a series of quilt-alongs. They're all free, totally free on my website, and I just take pictures of every step of the process, and I break it down, and I actually include the time. And so if someone wants to, you know, make, you know, one of my quilts, they can just follow along and they can do it on their own time period, you know? And so it's nothing, you know, nothing's ever due at any time, but it's allowed me, again, to get my thoughts out there, come up with ideas. And above all, I kind of work well with deadlines. So if I set myself an idea like, oh, I want to do a quilt along for the next 6 weeks, okay, let's break it up. And how can I do it 1 week at a time? And it's been really great and fun. And I've gotten to meet a lot of people, and You know, I always talk about, I always kind of say, you know, pick something in your career or in your life that you would do for free, even if nobody paid you for it, and you're going to be successful with it. And that's what I found with quilting.
And you also have been a great proponent of trying to quilt your own quilts. I know that it's not for everybody, but right. There are a lot of people who don't really take that extra step to give it a try. I know that when I learned to quilt, I knew I was going to make a lot of quilts. I've probably made over 600 projects so far. And and so I knew I needed to know how to quilt. So I had a huge motivation. I don't quilt all of my own things, but I like that you're sharing that it's possible and how to do that. Do you have like a place on your site people can go to see what you've done so far for quilting your own quilts?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, just lots of content on my blog, and I have my little list there, you know, teaching and where I'm going to be and all that kind of fun stuff. And that just kind of came about because ever since the beginning, I always quilted my own quilts. I tied them in the beginning, and then I machine quilted them. And again, it's all about the fun. I have discovered that I actually like every step of the process. Machine quilting is probably my favorite part of the process, but I enjoy every step of it. And I thought, as a teacher, how can I make that fun? You know, how can I make basting fun? How can I make binding fun? How can I make machine quilting fun? And a lot of it, I always tell my students, just, you know, come into class with a can-do attitude. We're going to have a great time. It's not going to be scary. And the biggest thing is I think, like you said, you know, not everybody's going to enjoy every step of the process, and that's okay, but how do you know until you try? And so I'm a big proponent of getting out there, teaching people how to make a complete quilt, and then it's up to them. You know, some people may decide that, you know, the hand binding is their favorite thing, or other people may decide, you know, that machine quilting is their favorite thing, so they go off and have this wonderful career as a professional machine quilter, but you just never know until you try. So I want to arm people with the possibilities, I want to encourage them, and I like to be an enabler and a cheerleader for it. And so if you want to learn it, I want to teach it.
Well, Krista, this has been so much fun. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Pat. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Now, when you go out to Krista's site, KristaQuilts.com, you can go up to her information bar, and there's tutorials and freebies and her Krista Quilts section and articles she's written, and some of her lessons are under the tutorial tab. So thanks, Krista.
Thanks so much, Pat. We'll see you around.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. All the shows are podcasted. You can go back and listen to every single one. You can visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, and there's a tab for you to find the shows and find free patterns and lots of tutorials, both printed and by video. I am Pat Sloan. You can come out and visit me at my website, patsloan.com. I have a newsletter you can sign up for. I also go out and about, so I might see you while I'm on the road, while I'm teaching. And I hope you will come and say hello and tell me if you listen to the show. So next time, we are going to come back with brand new guests, and it's going to be a really fun show. See you then.
To visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.